Accession number 29243, reel 1.
And then I'll talk into the mic and it flickers on and off, does it? Yes, it does. Right, so it should be recording properly now. So, anyway, we're just... I've explained to you... I better say that here I am with Ray Cornwall in Mesney Way in Shoreham. Ray was 5 years old when the war started. And you've lived all the time here in Shoreham?
Shoreham.
Same house?
No, I lived at Bowers Road.
Yeah, oh, not all that far away.
Only just up the road,
yeah.
That's right, because and that was obviously my parents' home.
Yeah, you're going to tell me something about... Well, first of all, if you could just tell me about your life before the war. You know, how your family came to be here, and, you know, what your dad's job was and all that sort of thing. You know.
My family started off, obviously, with my grand and grandfather. They came to Shoreham at the turn of the 19th century. Mm. 20th century. And my grandfather came as the baker in the village shop, which is now the Battle of Britain Museum.
Yeah.
He left that, and then my gran and granddad moved down to Crown Road. My father had four brothers. They lived in Crown Road. They went to the Shoreham School. Then my mother, she came from Durham. She couldn't find work because of the Depression. And so she was 16 when she came to Shoreham. And she came to work in the vicarage as a maid for the Reverend Ford, it was, I think it was. And obviously met my father. They got married. And they took a house in 1936, February 36, in Bowers Road, a new house which was built at the time. I was 6 weeks old when we actually moved in. In other words, I'm sure I'm a boy right through and through.
Yes.
My father was born in the village, I was born in the village. Before that, I can't remember a lot because quite naturally, I was under five before the war itself. I can have vague recollections at that early time of... my father having to go in the army, and they rejected him on health grounds. So therefore, he then became a member of the Home Guard. I think it was called Civil Defence when he first started up. But anyway, he joined the Home Guard. He worked in Pett's Wood, delivering coal into South London and things like that. So he had to sort of put up with a lot more sort of disruption particularly in the early part of the war and the Battle of Britain. And, he had one or two near misses, I think. He sort of went through the war, with the Home Guard under Major Greenwood from Kilmarnock. My first recollections of the war was, I was about five when the war started. And all I can remember in those early days was the air raid siren and bombs dropping and that. Therefore, my father decided that, well, we had to do something to protect ourselves. And I suppose it had been sort of mentioned in the village and so forth. What it had to be done. So he barricaded our bathroom with 4x2 wood so that it made a shelter. So that when the siren went and the cranes come over and the guns were banging away from Woolwich Arsenal or whatever, we were safe. So, I being the child, I had to sleep in the bath.
Yeah.
Bath was made.
This was downstairs bathroom.
This was downstairs bathroom. And it was in the middle of the house. It's a semi, up at Bowes Road, was a semi-detached house. So therefore that was regarded as the safest room in the building. So, you know, and then, as I say, being barricaded up on all sides and in the doors and that with 4x2s, I suppose if we got a hit, that hopefully that room would have been reasonably safe for us. But anyway, that's what I remember at that early stage.
Can you, well, you're presumably too young to remember the day war broke out. I mean,
I can't actually remember the, you know, that that as such, no.
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 And of course it was 6 months really before you had an air raid alert, apart from the false alerts. No.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. I think when the bombing really started, you know, the siren go and sometimes nothing had happened. In fact, this is probably the quiet period that we had, you know, what they called the false war. But, you know, the thing is, we got to a point where, well, it's only the siren going off, they must be testing it. And that was the sort of attitude that was sort of taken. And I was actually at the school, and there was talk at the school that they were going to have to build a shelter for the children and one thing and another. Now, I think this shelter was built in the playground in Church Street, and it was a brick shelter that was built. Anyway, then,
because you started school almost exactly the same time as the war started, didn't you?
Oh yes, that's right. Well, sometimes, you know, you could hear the anti-aircraft guns before there was any siren. So sometimes you got a siren, sometimes you didn't. Now then, that, I suppose, was, as we say, the false war. And then Hitler started on his Battle of Britain. And I think that's when things started to sort of get a bit noisy and exciting, and what have you. Now then, I can remember that one night there were many bombs going off through the valley, and it started with a siren, and then there was aircraft coming over. You could hear the aircraft coming up through the valley that, and you could hear crump 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 in the distance from Ainsford, end of the village, and they gradually got louder and louder, which, you know, was a little bit frightened because you could hear these coming, think, gosh, you know, and they went right the way through the valley, this particular, I can't tell you exactly when it was, because obviously I was too young to even worry about that, but as it progressed up through the valley, it literally damaged quite a lot of houses as it went through the valley, and luckily, there's nobody killed during this. It was one of those fortunate sort of situations. And I remember my grandmother, who lived in Crown Road, she was complaining bitterly the next day that her ceiling had been brought down and the windows had been knocked out because Jerry had come home and bombed us instead of bombing Biggin Hill, because apparently that's what they were after. That was one particular night, and I think my parents were more, well, I think my father might not have been there, he might have been on duty, because he used to go on duty up at Donkey Bank, but just above Coombe Hollow. But, you know, I know my mother was quite agitated over this, and, you know, I had to stay well and truly in the shelter of the bathroom. Eventually, we did get shelters, but anyway, I'll say about that in a minute. Another night we can remember, an aeroplane, you know, the siren went, an aeroplane came over, and there was bombs dropped, and you could hear something going off. But one, a landmine dropped in the cottages, which is opposite to Orchard House, which is where Dr. Lothian and is there. Now, apparently, a chap, his name was Jack Smith, I think, he actually saw this bomb coming down on a parachute. So he went to the local policeman, PC Manry, and told him about it. So he came straight up to the area and he literally cleared everybody away from the area. Now, eventually, I think it was the following day, obviously I can't remember exactly, possibly someone like George de Decker better tell you better than I, because he's that little bit older. But that bomb did actually blow up, and it literally flattened the cottages. It's where the bungalows are now, you know. And it literally flattened that. The houses on the other side of the road, on the west side of the road, the end of that house was blown right out because, you know, naturally, we were, as youngsters, we were so keen to go and see what damage had done. And Orchard House itself, the chimneys were flattened and knocked down. Well, after that, they cleared that area there and they put a fire station, or a temporary fire station there, so that there was always a fire station in case there was any problems during any of the raids.
So you didn't actually see the... it was a delayed action thing, wasn't
it? It was a delayed action bomb, yes, that's right.
So it blew up about a day after
it was
fell.
I think it was a day out the following day that it actually blew up. You know, obviously Mr. Manning, the policeman there, because he was a good copper during the war, and he literally sort of kept an eye on it, and they had the civil defence in, and, you know, I think Major Miller, who lived in Wayside, he sort of coordinated everybody in keeping it clear until it actually blew up, because that's where the air raid warden's post was. You know, they had sort of black helmets with WP painted in white on them, and he had his team who sort of covered this village, I suppose. Home Guard was controlled by Major Benny Greenwood, and he, all the chaps, you know, Stan Sander, he used to live over the road there in Mesney Way, and he was one of the air raid posts, but my father was with the Home Guard, and you know, they used to sort of clash with each other, I think, but so often used to have arguments as about who was doing their duty properly, because, you know, the air raid warden people, they always had to make sure that, particularly when raids were on, that nobody had left any lights on. And Stan over the road there, he always used to come around saying, "Put that light out, put your light out." And I can remember one night there, and Father was at home at a particular time. We'd put our blackouts up because we had square, or things the same shape as the, you know, frames, the same shape as the window, but they were sort of covered in either black material. I think we had it covered in sort of tar stuff, and we put it up in windows so that you could have a low light indoors. And, you know, we could hear this chap coming up, and it was Stan, he was saying, "Put that light out, Corny, put that light out." So I said, "What's he on about? We haven't got a light on, you know, it's only low." So he went outside, he said, "What are you on about, Stan?" So he says, "Look up that light," he says, "you've got a light shining in your..." He says, my father looked at him, "Don't be daft," he says, "that's the moon shining on the glass," he says. So, you know, it had its funny side as well. I think that right. Well, eventually we had proper shelters offered for each, every, and every household, as well as communal ones. There was a big dugout underground shelter was built on the recreation ground, and that was more or less where the children's playground is now. You sort of had two entrances, so that obviously if one end got banged up, you could get out the other side. And it was quite a big shelter. And if we were ever up at school playing on the on the recreation ground, because we didn't have the school field in them days, we had to come to the recreation ground for any sports that we had. So, you know, if the siren went, we all had to dive into this shelter and sit on the forms, the wooden forms that they had in there. Now, each...
Were you in the shelter a long time? I mean, did the raid last a long time?
Well, we'd have to stay there until you're all clear.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it'd be a false alarm. Sometimes it would be just planes going over Sometimes there wouldn't be any bombs or anything like that. You'd always hear the guns starting up. And, you know, you sometimes you'd hear the guns go off before before the siren went. Obviously, you had guns up at Fort Halstead. You had Woolwich Arsenal, which you could hear them. They used to hear a lot of noise from over that way, over the north. And over Dartford way. Over towards the east.
Because that was where the barrage was, wasn't
That's
it?
Where the big barrage was,
and then
that's right.
And then it got moved out later on in the war, didn't it, to you?
That's right, that's right. And then, of course, obviously Fort Halstead. So therefore, there was plenty of guns going off around here. And we'd hear a lot of guns, guns going off. And also, we'd get, you know, particularly at night, you could hear, because most of the raids were nighttime raids, somewhat daylight, but a lot of them were nighttime. And you could literally hear the shrapnel falling on the roofs, and because as youngsters we used to go out looking for it and searching for the shrapnel. But it sounded like rain, but I think most of that was sort of flak from the from the cannon shells, which say the anti-aircraft shells and so forth.
You could be quite a long time down in the shelter.
We would have to stay in the shelter until the all clear went.
Yeah.
You know, once the planes had turned around and gone back over to France, I suppose, you know, the all clear. You'd always could tell the difference. The air raid warning itself would go, wah, wah, wah. But in the all clear, it'd be, wah. A nice steady note, so that there was a big difference.
Yes, we fought our way through.
That's right. You know, and it's something that you will always remember, that note. You know, that particular sound, you would always hear it, because we always had two. There was the loud one, which obviously was from Fort Halstead, and there was a quieter one, which obviously was for Orpington or wherever, or from certainly up in the north we could hear it, so it wasn't meant for us, but we could still hear it. So sometimes you'd hear their all clear go, and then it would be another 5 minutes before we got our all clear. And then we could then come back and resume our game or go back to the school or whatever. That's what it was like as far as...
Yeah, I mean, in school hours, well, it was mostly night time, so, mostly not, but did you have any activities to keep the children amused and that sort of thing during the...
Well, in the shelters, yes. See, if we was at the school, then we'd go in the big, in the shelter in the school.
Yeah.
And that, they had all had tables and forms in there, and they had pencils and books. And, well, whatever we were doing in the class, we'd continue in the shelter. So, you know, it wasn't really disrupted to that extent. I think the headmaster we had at that store for part of that time was a Mr. Westbrook. He was a temporary headmaster. The first headmaster, remember, was Mr. Coombs. He left, and then they couldn't get a permanent headmaster, so they got this chap called Mr. Westbrook. Now, whether he cared or not, don't really know. But we seemed to play a lot of rounders. And we always used to go to the recreation ground and play rounders. And I think that was the only time I only ever played hooky from school once. And that was while they were playing rounders then. And I thought, we get so fed up, my pal and I. He said, no, he says, we don't want to play rounders, do we? He says, no, let's go up the hills. So we disappears up the hill instead of going to school. Anyway, next thing is there they are, all the youngsters. We saw them from the hill playing on the recreation ground, and they were jeering. So we thought, let's go down and watch them. So we went down behind under the hedge and sort of watching them. Then the air raid siren went. We thought, oh, what do we do now? And then we could hear some aeroplanes coming, you see. We thought, well, are they ours or are they theirs? So we thought, well, what do we do? You know, I thought, well, you know, we'd be in dead trouble if they start sort of bombing or anything like that. So we thought, oh, well, perhaps we'd better go down to the shelter. So anyway, we went to the shelter in the wreck there, and, well, I suppose the inevitable happened. We had to explain ourselves to why we played hockey. And I don't think I played... Well, no, I didn't play hockey again after that. It taught me quite a lesson.
Hmm. So, I mean, did you do, you know, singing and that sort of thing, you know, as one of the traditions of the area, Chelsea?
Well, yes. Yeah, we did do singing and that, yeah. I can't remember what sort of songs they were. I suppose it was, you know... Bobby Shufto and them sort of songs, which were school songs anyway, but they were the sort of songs that we'd been taught, and you know, we literally knew them off by heart. So if there weren't any, especially on the recreation ground, because there wasn't so many facilities, because that was a sort of general shelter, whereas the school shelter was specifically for the children. Whereas the one at the shelter in the recreation ground, that was for you know, a sort of village shelter. So well, we had to make our own entertainment, or entertainment that the teachers gave us.
Talking a little bit about the school, of course, you had a big influx of evacuees in September 1939, didn't you?
We did, yes. Now that's a point which I'd forgotten. Yes, we had two or three evacuees actually staying with us. We had most of them came from sort of South London. Some did actually stay in the village. There was one lad, his name was Mickey Moon. He stayed with Mrs. D.I., which is Joyce Sainer's mother. There was a chap by the name of John Cooper who stayed with us, and another one, John Willits, at a different time, but he was an evacuee who stayed with us. They literally lived with us. He lived with me as my brother, I suppose, in that respect. Went to the school in the same way. In fact, I got into trouble because of John Cooper once, because we were going down knocking conkers down to play conkers, and he'd thrown this. Well, we were both doing it. We were all doing it. There was quite a number of us, half a dozen of us or so, knocking conkers down, and he threw this stick, and he literally threw it at this girl and cut her head open. And he was a little bit devious. He blamed me for it, so I had to take the blame for it, and I got into trouble at school because of it, and I never forgave him for it, even to this day. Several of the lads who were evacuated here, they actually stayed here. One of them was Vic Dean. I don't know if you remember Vic Dean. He was with an old Shoreham couple, Mr. and Mrs. Farmer. They lived in High Street, just by the landway, and then they moved up, further up after the war. They moved further up the village, opposite Wayside. And then Vic, he married a lass who'd come from Ireland to work for Lord Dunsany. And they lived in church cottages for quite a number of years. And, you know, they've got two children, a boy and a girl, and they sort of still come round here at times.
I mean, is he still alive?
No, he died a couple of years ago. Yeah. And rather unfortunate. But,
And is his wife, I mean, is there anyone out interviewing us?
They probably would, but I wouldn't know where to contact them. They don't live in the village now.
No. Do any of the evacuees we can contact in this town?
I literally lost touch with all of them. Can remember quite a number of them. There was a bloke by the name of Jenner. He lived up in Mill Lane. But I certainly don't know where they live, or would I be able to contact them now?
Yeah.
In fact, one day, you know, while we were living here, so that it wasn't that many years ago, suddenly a guy come up and he was trying to sell me some dusters and cleaning fluids and things like that. And I said, no. I said, on your bike. I said, you know, I said, I'm not buying anything off you. So I said, I don't buy at the doorstep. Goodbye. So he said, well, he said, yeah, he said, I'm an old shoring person. I was here in the, during the war, see. So I thought, well, if you were here during the war, I said, then you'd know who I am then. So we had a discussion, and it turned out to be this chap, Jenner. But he was not a very nice character, that particular one. And I think he had been inside and one thing and another. And anyway, he related what he'd been doing and one thing and another. But he wasn't the sort of guy that I would want to sort of stay friends with, you know. It was interesting to meet someone who had been evacuated here during the war and that.
Did this change the school routine? Because you got an awful lot of extra people in the school, didn't you?
If it did, I suppose I was probably, at that early stage, I was probably did not too well aware of it. Or it didn't really concern me in as much that, you know, I still had medication, as it were. Yeah. From my point of view, it was just more people, had come from London.
Yeah.
And we couldn't really understand why they'd come from London, because, you know, we were getting bombs and aircraft. And, but there again, we didn't realise that they were getting a darn sight worse than what we were. You see, a lot of people from here were evacuated. Obviously in the 40s or very early 40s, we was asked to go to either Seton or Beer. That's where the people from here, children from here, went. And my mother said, no, he's not going. If we're going to catch it, we'll all catch it. So she said, we're not going. So I didn't go. Our next door neighbours went, and they went to, the Cheesemans. They went to Beer and Seton, or Beer or Seton it was.
Yes.
Now, two of those people are still in Shoreham. That's Mary Gillam.
Mm.
She was Mary Cheeseman. And Rosie Wright.
Mm.
She was there, and I think they went down there.
Mm.
Roger and Johnny, unfortunately, they died.
Mm.
So, you know, there's one or two of them gone. I suppose from that point of view, that's about all I know.
Yeah. So you were never evacuated?
I was never evacuated, no. No, I had to stay here.
Well, anyway, I interrupted your story. You were telling me, you know, about the bombing, weren't you?
Yeah, I was telling you about shelters, wasn't I?
Yes, yeah.
Well, that's it. Well, I told you about the school one and the one on there. But each individual house had a choice. You could either have a Morrison shelter or an Anderson shelter.
Mm.
Now, the Morrison shelter was a big table, a big metal table, and it had wire cage all the way around. And we had that, and, you know, as opposed to this room, it was sort of, it was put right up against this wall here.
Mm.
And I suppose it was about, came out about this, so I suppose it was about.
Right where we're sitting.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was. It was a big one, and it was caged and that, and it was a metal top.
Yeah.
But Mother had put something over the top of it and made it look like, you know, I think the actual sitting room table was tucked away upstairs for the duration, I suppose. But that was our shelter.
Did you use it at all?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, we did. I'll tell you about a couple of our stories in a minute. The other choice was the Anderson. Mm. Now, the Anderson shelter was a metal one like that. It was about 6 foot high and, I suppose, about 8 or 9 foot in length. Now, that was buried in the ground.
Mm.
It was buried in the ground you know, about 4 foot down, and then the top was covered in earth right over the top, so that you couldn't see it from the air or whatever. And like next door, the Wingates, they had they were Chatfields then, and they had an Anderson shelter, and when an air raid went, they'd come down because they'd had beds in there and had a Primus stove and all that, and they literally lived it in it overnight. But I suppose it was during the Battle of Britain when you know you were getting constant raids, because even if bombs weren't actually dropped on Shoreham of a night, planes were always going over because there were constant raids day and night during that particular period. So, you know, the shelters were used quite a lot. And in fact, I had to literally, that was my bed. I always had to sleep, whatever happened, I always had to sleep. At that particular time, I had to sleep in the air raid shelter.
The Anderson, is it?
The Morrison shelter.
Your Morrison.
Next doors had the Anderson. Mm. And I think that, and next doors, Cheeseman's next door to us, they had an Anderson. But then the children there, as Roger and Anne and Rosie and that, I think they slept in them quite frequently. But they thought it was great fun to sleep in the thing because they had their beds and that all there, and they were left there so that they didn't have to sort of keep taking stuff in and out. I think that's about it on shelters, really, unless you've got a question.
Well, I mean, we've talked about the conventional bombing. I mean, later on you had the missile attack, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I can remember when they were attacking Biggin Hill, because there was one particular night when they used to drop incendiaries to light up at night time, they'd drop incendiaries to light up the area. And they set the woods alight, but